Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Smell the blood.
Hello. During the past few weeks, we've been talking mostly about the Clinton government's war against Serbia, and I've sometimes gotten a little hot under the collar. Some listeners have accused me of becoming intemperate. Well, perhaps so. But let me assure you, I do bite my tongue pretty hard to avoid saying what I really feel sometimes, because the FBI certainly would lock me up if I said everything I felt like saying, and Janet Reno would file all sorts of charges against me. But I must tell you, I do not believe that it is intemperate of me to say that this monstrosity of a government we have in Washington is an evil thing which must be destroyed by any means necessary. I believe that everyone who serves this government, of whatever party, is a traitor to our country and an enemy to our people and should be dealt with accordingly. You see, that's the sort of statement which some listeners believe is intemperate, but which I believe is merely a statement of fact. And it's a statement which needs to be made because people need to think about it. I really have a hard time trying to reason with people who can remain calm when their government is murdering our kinsmen in another country wholesale. People get excited when a couple of nutcase teenagers in Colorado kill 13 of their classmates. They wring their hands and say, "Oh, isn't it just awful? What will we do about violence in our society?" But they remain calm when their government deliberately murders 7,000 or so. That's 7,000 of our kinsmen in Europe in order to make them obey the orders of a bunch of nutcase would-be commissars for the New World Order. It's big news for weeks when Timothy McVeigh blows up one building in Oklahoma City. But when our government, using our armed forces and our tax money, blows up dozens of buildings and kills hundreds of people every day in Serbia, the news is just ho-hum stuff. It's likely to be preempted by a basketball game. Maybe part of this lackadaisical attitude about the government's mass murder in Serbia is due to the feminization of American society and of the American male that I've complained about. Men's mental horizons have been contracted to the point where murder is real only when it happens next door. If it happens in another country, it isn't real. It's just something one sees on television. Or maybe some people just play too many video games. I guess that's the case with our military people. They don't seem to have any problem with killing people wholesale for no good reason when it's all done with smart weapons and video screens. You press a button, use a joystick to guide the bomb to its target, then boom, just like in a video arcade. That's not like having to get up close and stick a knife in your victim and listen to him scream or shoot him in the head and get splattered with his blood and brains. But you know, the latter way is really much better, at least from a moral standpoint. Because when a normal person, a moral person, has to kill another person up close, he needs a good reason for doing it. A better reason, anyway, then that's what he's paid to do. Too many of our military people have the attitude that they're just being paid to play an exciting video game when they guide their smart bombs to their targets. But in fact, they're being paid to murder the men, women, and children who are blown to bits by those bombs. And you know, it's not just the murder of Serbs that people should be concerned about. They should be concerned that it's their government committing the murders, not someone else's government that's none of their concern. We have a gang of homicidal maniacs running our country. People should be concerned about that. Do you think I'm misusing the word murder? Listen, I understand that sometimes people need to be killed. I can think of a lot of people in Washington and New York and Hollywood that need to be killed, and the sooner the better. I have no problem with killing people who are trying to kill us. I have no problem with self-defense. I don't consider that murder. In this era of total government corruption, I don't consider the assassination of a politician or a bureaucrat to be murder. I don't consider the killing of a domestic enemy of our people to be murder, or of a foreign enemy when the killing is in defense of our people in time of war. But when a gang of Jews and wannabe commissars for the New World Order deliberately kill people who are not our enemies, who have not harmed or threatened us, and with whom we are not at war, and when the people being killed are our fellow Europeans, and whether the excuse for killing them is that we need to stabilize Europe so that it will remain a good market for American products, as Mr. Clinton claimed, or that we are doing it for humanitarian reasons because the Serbs were being too rough in putting down a KLA insurrection, as Madeleine Albright claimed, or that we need to force the Serbs to choose a different president and learn to like multiculturalism, as General Wesley Can Clark claimed, regardless of the excuse, it is murder. The people who ordered the killing are murderers. The people who did the killing are murderers, even if they were being paid to do it. The people who helped in any way in the killing, or who gave aid and encouragement to the killers, are accessories to murder. It is murder whether the people being killed are soldiers or civilians. It is murder even if the bomb accidentally missed the target and hit something else instead. When anyone is killed, accidentally or not, during the commission of a felony, it is murder. You don't get off by saying, "Judge, I didn't mean to kill the man. I just intended to part his hair and scare him so that he would hand over his wallet. But my aim was bad, and the bullet accidentally hit him between the eyes." That excuse doesn't work when you accidentally kill one man on the street trying to persuade him to give up his wallet. And it doesn't work when you accidentally kill a couple of thousand civilians trying to persuade a nation to surrender its territory to you. The fact that you are a high-ranking government official, a president, say, or a secretary of state, or a secretary of defense, or a general, does not excuse murder. It does not give you a warrant to commit murder. A lot of Americans seem to think that it's all right for a government to do whatever it wants to do, including killing people. But you know, the conditions under which our government is permitted to kill people are very tightly circumscribed. A government official can't legally kill people just because he wants to persuade them to change their ways, even if those people happen to live in another country, unless that country is at war against us. Indeed, the fact that the killings in Serbia were ordered by a gang of high-ranking government officials in Washington makes these killings far more reprehensible than if they had been done by a gang of international jewel thieves or some deranged Muslim sect. The fact that they were done by a government, our government in fact, makes them far more worrisome for us. I would sleep a lot better at night if the murderers in Washington simply liked to slip out of the side door of the White House at night with an ice pick or an axe and kill some hapless citizen on the sidewalk for the thrill of it. That would be far less dangerous for America than having a government which plans mass murder as an act of state and claims the right to do so. And really, it's even worse than that. The mass murder of Serbs by the official gangsters in Washington is only one act in a program that ultimately will involve the mass murder of lots of other people. These gangsters have been planning for many years their move to replace the governments of sovereign nations everywhere with their new world order. The Gentile liberals in the gang are adherents to the very trendy idea that nation-states are passé and ought to be abolished. These deracinated liberals find abhorrent the idea of a tribe, a nation, a group of people with common blood and a common culture, common roots, a common religion, having their own territory where they can do things their way without having to ask anyone else's permission and can keep other people out if they choose. To these liberals, that's very bad, very backward. It's exclusive rather than inclusive. It doesn't leave much room for diversity and multiculturalism and the other things liberals are so fond of. Worst of all, it doesn't allow the liberals to meddle. It doesn't allow the liberals to choose what sort of government the people should have. It doesn't allow the liberals to impose their own social ideas on the society. And so these Gentile liberals in the New World Order gang are quite certain everything will be much better, much more modern and progressive when all national governments have been abolished and replaced by a single world government, under their control, of course. With a world government, they can meddle to their heart's content. They can plan the economy. They can make sure that everyone has the most progressive form of government. They can make sure that there is a proper racial balance everywhere. They can make sure that everyone is equal. They can decide what the kiddies everywhere will learn in school. No more sexism. No more racism. No more homophobia. No more inequality. No more bigotry or intolerance. Everything controlled completely by liberals who know what's best for all of us. Won't that be wonderful? I mean, this one world government idea, this new world order idea, really does appeal to these nutcase liberals. Of course, it will mean the end of freedom, but to the liberals, that's not really important. What's much more important than freedom, they are quite sure, is security and comfort. We won't even have to worry about making any big decisions in the future. They will all be made for us. There won't be any more war, they believe, because wars are between nation states. And when nation states are abolished, how can there be war? Well, as for civil wars, they plan to mix everyone up enough, homogenize the population everywhere to the point where civil wars won't be possible either. No possibility that one part of the world society will be different enough from another part that they will want to fight each other. And as for rebellions, well, they plan to keep a close eye on everyone who looks like he might think any unapproved thoughts, everyone who refuses to go with the flow. If we have to double or triple or quadruple the size of the secret police, well, that will be a small price to pay for the security of knowing that the FBI is keeping the loners and the independent thinkers under control. This whole concept of abolishing freedom so that everyone can be more secure and comfortable, this idea of making everyone's decisions for him, is very feminine, and it has gained more adherence as our society has lost its masculinity and become more feminized. And of course, the idea won't work. But the liberals like to pretend that they believe it will. and they have been very fond of this pretense for a long time. Most of the time, they have been fairly discreet about it, because they have realized that if the hoi polloi realized what they were planning, they might be lynched. So they disguised their plans. They led the public everywhere to believe that they really didn't intend to go much beyond the United Nations, sort of an international mutual aid organization, but no interference with national sovereignty. But they got tired of these half measures, tired of the limitations, tired of holding themselves back. They decided to go for it. So they told the government of Yugoslavia that it couldn't put down the Albanian rebellion in Kosovo. It told the Serbs that they could not suppress the KLA terrorists and rearrange the demographics of their Kosovo province to suit themselves. It wouldn't be permitted. The Serbs, of course, told them to go to hell, to mind their own business. And so the New World Order gang began killing Serbs with bombs and missiles. The liberals have begun their grand program to eliminate national sovereignty everywhere and make everyone subject to the New World Order. They've come out of the closet. Of course, they didn't bother to ask for our approval of their project. They knew we wouldn't approve. We're too backward and too old-fashioned and racist for their grand idea of a New World Order. So they just did it. They just murdered 7,000 or so Serbs and forced the Serbs to submit. And so far, they've gotten away with it. One of the reasons they've gotten away with it so far is that they planned it very carefully and chose the right moment. The right moment was when they succeeded in getting Bill Clinton elected to a second term. If the American people would accept Bill Clinton for a second term as their president, knowing what a piece of filth he was from their experience with him during his first term, if the American people would accept Bill Clinton again, they would accept anything. And the right moment was when they had their own pliable tool, Boris Yeltsin, as head of the government of Russia, the only country in Europe which might put up any serious obstacle to their plans. And as a bonus, they also had their own man, Tony Blair, in as head of the British government. So when Clinton was reelected in 1996, they decided the time was right to make their move, to come out of the closet. So immediately after Clinton's reelection, they had him put Jews into every key post in the U.S. government that would be involved in the implementation of their move to begin enforcing the will of the New World Order. They had him choose a Jewish Secretary of State and staff all of the top posts in the State Department with Jews. They had him choose a Jewish Secretary of Defense and a Jewish National Security Chief. Those Jewish appointments were what tipped me off that they intended to start a major war at some time before the end of Clinton's second term. And I predicted this war in my broadcast of December 21st, 1996, right after Clinton's new cabinet appointments were announced. The reason I was convinced at that time that this rash of top-level Jewish appointments signaled that a major war was being planned is that Jews always have been at the core of the conspiracy to suppress national sovereignty and establish a New World Order dictatorship. The trendy, liberal, jet-setter Gentiles who have become thoroughly deracinated and have no trace of patriotism or any sense of racial consciousness or racial obligation make ideal collaborators for the Jews, but they are only collaborators. The Jews always have been the leaders and the planners of the New World Order conspiracy. They have been at it for 3,000 years, while the Gentile liberals have been helping them only for the last century or so. The idea of a world owned and dominated by Jews has been the cornerstone of the Jews' religion since Old Testament days. I've quoted from the book of their so-called prophet Isaiah before in this regard, but it's worth at least paraphrasing again now. Isaiah, supposedly speaking for the Jews' tribal god Yahweh, tells his fellow Jews that at some time in the future all the wealth of the Gentiles will be delivered to the Jews, and all of the Gentiles will become the Jews' servants, and any nation which refuses to hand over all its wealth to the Jews and become their servants will be destroyed. Every religious Jew for the past 2,700 years has read this and considered it holy writ. And of course, this prophecy of Isaiah fits right in with the Jews' even older claim, as set down in the books of their number one prophet, Moses, to be divinely chosen to rule the world, to be a holy people above all the other peoples of the earth. Now that, of course, is the Bible, which is pretty old and primitive stuff. You may believe that it's simply not relevant today and that it proves nothing. But it is relevant to understanding the thinking and the motivations of the Jews. The Jews would have us believe that they are simply a religious group, like the Methodists, say, who go to their own church, but are otherwise pretty much like everyone else. A little smarter, perhaps, a little more moral and trustworthy, a little more admirable, a little more picked on and persecuted than anyone else, but just normal people. No more conspiratorial or greedy or lusting after power than any other group. That's the way they portray themselves to us in the media they control. But they themselves certainly don't believe that they're pretty much like everyone else. They believe that they are special, that they are chosen. And whether they are religious or not, Isaiah's 2,700-year-old prophecy is one of the things which hold them together, one of the things which define their identity. They're all familiar with it, and in one sense or another, they all believe it. That's why it's relevant to the problems our own people are facing today. That's why every one of my listeners who is really concerned about what's happening in the world today, who is really concerned about what the New World Order gang is up to, and who wants to understand the Jews' role in the gang, must read what's in the Jews' Bible. Really, read at least the five books of Moses and the book of Isaiah. That's only 300 or so pages. Read it. Think about it. It is important. It will help you understand. And remember, it applies to non-religious Jews. It applies to the Jewish media bosses and the Clinton cabinet members and the white slave traders in Israel and the billionaire Jewish gangsters around Boris Yeltsin, just as much as it does to the funny-looking religious Jews you see in New York wearing long sideburns and black suits and yarmulkes. It applies to everyone who considers himself a member of the chosen people. You know, the biggest problem our people have with understanding these things is not lack of intelligence, and it's not that the information is hard to find. The problem is that our people are too credulous, too easily deceived. And deception is what the Jews are really good at. In the Soviet Union, they set up the bloodiest, the most murderous apparatus of repression the world has ever seen. based on the scheme of the Jew Karl Marx, with Jewish commissars like Lazar Kaganovich murdering millions of Ukrainians and Russians. And now they have us feeling sorry for them because the Russians and Ukrainians don't like them. Well, perhaps the crimes of the communists and the Soviet Union seem too far in the past to be real. But the blood we shed in Serbia in order to advance another Jewish scheme, that blood is still fresh. They have made murderers of us the way they made murderers of the Russians. It's time for us to smell the blood and stop being fooled by their lies. Thanks for being with me again today.